We come to Genesis chapter 32. We are going to cover the whole chapter from verse 1 to verse 32. We come to this message from fear to faith. And you will see how Jacob feared his brother Esau, but he was brought to faith in the Lord. Jacob had faced one crisis in his life just very recently, namely that he ran away from his uncle Laban after serving his uncle 20 years to gain for himself two wives, namely Leah and Rachel. We know already from our previous studies that God does not approve of any man marrying more than one wife at any one time. And unless that wife passes away, you are not to have another wife. We know that. But God overlooked the sins of his people because he had a higher purpose to fulfill through them. And so what happened was that after serving for his wives for 14 years, he served another 6 years to gain the property that he now had. The property was in the name of the animals that he kept, the cattle, the sheep, the goats, the camels. And so Jacob was a very rich man. When Laban, his uncle, began to show his disfavor towards him, Jacob began to consider whether it was time for him to go home to see his own father in Canaan. He had been away for 20 years and more, and he now felt that it was time to go. And confirmation came when God spoke to him and said, "It is time for you to go," and God promised to bless him. So Jacob brought this to his two wives and explained everything thoroughly, and the two wives were wholeheartedly behind Jacob. They were very supportive of him, and together they moved away. And after 7 days of going home, after they have entered Gilead, which is the northeastern part of Israel, Laban caught up with Jacob. And he encamped facing Jacob's camp. And imagine the tension between them as they finally talked to one another. And Laban confronted Jacob. And Jacob had to submit himself to being searched because Laban accused him of stealing his household gods. And after not finding the household gods, Jacob in turn was full of righteous anger. "Please sit down and don't move." And then he was full of righteous anger to the point that he burst out on Laban and say, "Why is it that you are accusing me? Why? You see, all these years I have served you and you have cheated me this 10 times and so on. So Jacob was given the opportunity to give his own back to Laban. And Laban knew that what Jacob said was wrong, but being a man full of pride, and his face was so thick, so he was so wanting to preserve his own face. So he claimed, "All that you have are mine, but let us enter into a covenant with one another, that from now on, I don't cross over to harm you, and you don't cross over to harm me. So let us make a covenant." And so that was what they did. They make a covenant between themselves. And so the crisis was over. One crisis out of his mind, but Jacob now was faced with another crisis coming up. He was going to return to his father, which was in Canaan, which is today's Palestine, to which is today's Israel. Okay? Now, he knew that he would be very near to his brother Esau, who has gone to live in Edom, also known as Seir, in the southeast corner of Israel. So imagine the land of Israel with the Mediterranean Sea on your left, and in the center of Israel runs the River Jordan. Right? So Jacob had moved back from Mesopotamia to Gilead, where he was confronted by Laban, and then he moved further south, and then he was going to cross over to the land of Canaan. But he knew that the land of Canaan was just near to Edom, where his brother Esau lived. And if he did not make peace with Esau, sooner or later Esau was going to come and create trouble for him. So before he even crossed over the Jordan to see his father, he better make peace with Esau. So that was his concern. So you see now that Esau was still very much on the mind of Jacob. And Jacob decided that he should take the initiative to make peace with Esau. But before he could meet with Esau, God confronted him and God dealt with him first. So he feared Esau so much when he should have feared God more. He should have made peace with God first before he made peace with Esau. And here God in his gracious way confronted him and dealt graciously with him before he even had his confrontation with Esau. So in this study, we are going to learn that our enmity with God is a far greater problem than our problems with men. And we are to seek reconciliation with our God before we consider seeking reconciliation with men. So first, think of our vertical relationship before we think of the horizontal relationship. Often it is that we look upon the problems of life as so very big, when we have a bigger problem with our God which has not been sorted out yet. So that is a lesson we are going to learn, that our enmity with God is a far greater problem than our problems with man. So let us seek to make peace with God before we seek to deal with our problems on this earth. And this lesson is brought across to us under two sections. Firstly, we are going to see how Jacob prepared to face the problem with man. Then we are going to consider how he prevailed in his problem with God. So those are the two sections. So let us consider the first section, preparing to face the problem with man. Jacob was going to make plans. He made his plan. Then Jacob was going to pray. Then Jacob was going to consider bringing his present to Esau to appease him. So these are what we are going to see, how he prepared to solve the problem with man. First, Jacob made his plan. But before he could plan, you see, God came to minister to him. He met with angels. Remember that when he first escaped from Esau, when he ran up north at Bethel, while he was going to sleep, he had a dream, and in this dream God appeared to him and he saw angels ascending and descending on the ladder that stretched from heaven down to earth. And this was to show that he needed a mediator. The angels were there to serve God, but remember, the angels ascended and descended on that ladder, which also can be translated as a staircase. There is this staircase between heaven and earth. And in the New Testament, we know that that staircase is Jesus Christ. So Jesus Christ is the mediator between heaven and earth. Jesus Christ is the one who mediates between God and man. And the angels are there only to serve God. And they could serve God only by ascending and descending upon that ladder. And the focus should therefore be upon the ladder, the mediator, Jesus Christ. We need that ladder between heaven and earth, between God and man. And that had been the experience of Jacob. God came to minister to him, to reassure him. The angel of the Lord spoke, and Jacob was comforted as he left the land of Canaan to Mesopotamia to work for his uncle Laban. Okay. So 20 long years have passed, and now he was coming down to return to his father. And before even he began to plan, God came to minister to him. His angels met with Jacob. And the way the Lord ministered to him was simple. He just caused Jacob to see that there were angels encamped together. And just as he was encamped together, remember, he was a rich man at this time. His group of people were so many. His property was so big. He had many animals. So he had his own immediate family. So he would have his own tent. And his wives each would have their own tent, as we have seen already how Laban searched through each of their tents. Okay? Then his children would have their own tents. The servants would have their own tents. Then there would be places cordoned up for the cattle, the goats, the sheep, the camels. So you can imagine, one tent here, one tent there, the bivouac, the that encircled the animals, everything together. It was a sizable camp. Okay? And to the amazement of Jacob, one day he woke up and he saw, he looked, did I see wrongly? He probably rubbed his eyes. So he's not mistaken. And he probably walked nearer and he recognized that these were angels of God, like what he had seen previously, 20 years ago, when he was escaping from his brother. And they were encamped around. See? They were encamped. He saw them. See? And this was God's grace to him. God was reminding him that he was not alone. As he traveled home to Canaan, his heart got heavier and heavier. He was brooding more and more. He was so anxious about meeting his brother Esau. He was so fearful. And God, in his quiet way, was like putting his arm around Jacob's shoulder and say, my son, you do not have to worry because you are not alone. Okay? That was God's way of reassuring him. And Jacob felt reassured. He knew that he was not alone. Remember the case many years later, hundreds of years later, in the days of Elisha, when his servant was so fearful of the enemies who surrounded the nation of Israel. Elisha told him not to be fearful, and Elisha prayed that God will open his eyes. And God opened the young man's eye, and he saw the angels of God all around them, and it strengthened him. And that goes to show that Jacob on this occasion was similarly strengthened by seeing the camp of angels. So he thought he had a big camp, and this is not an army camp, this is a camp of civilians, and he was so concerned that they were going to be attacked by Esau. But now God was showing him that there is a camp, not even a human military camp, this is a camp of God's angels, all ready to protect him, all ready to fight on his behalf. Here is God's way of reassuring Jacob even before he came up with any plan to meet with Esau. Okay? God was gracious in taking the initiative to come and minister to him. And as we go along, you come to realize that it gave Jacob an idea. So he called the name Mahanaim, which means double camp. Here is my camp, and here is the camp of the angels of God. So he felt very much reassured. So he decided now to send messengers to Esau. Instead of waiting for Esau to come and confront him, he will confront Esau. And that was right. Over the years, while working for Laban, he was weaned off his deceit. Jacob, the deceiver, was always full of tricks, and he's always using his clever mind. And no doubt this man was a very clever man, but he's using his cleverness in the wrong way, all the time thinking of gaining for himself at the expense of others, all the time thinking of his own comfort and his own gain, and all the time not feeling for the pain caused to other people. Now God was going to wean him, squeeze out of him all the deceit in this man. So in his time with Laban, what happened is that he learned the value of hard work. In the past, he was the mother's boy. Everything was cooked and served to him. Remember how the brother came home hungry and saw the bowl of lentil soup, and he asked for the lentil soup, and Jacob exchanged that for his birthright. And you think Jacob cooked it himself? It's more likely that his mother Rebecca who cooked it for him. He was really a mother's boy. And later on, when he wanted to cheat his father by claiming himself to be Esau, the elder son, so what happened is that the mother cooked for him nice meat stew and brought it to the father. See, the mother was the one who cooked for him on his behalf. So that was what happened. Okay? So Jacob, all these years in working for Laban, learned the value of hard work. We can gain a measure of satisfaction in working hard. There is such a thing as honest hard work. And money, riches gained from our own hard work, is really something we can rightly be proud of. We are not depending on handouts from people. We are not scrounging around, moaning all the time that I have no money. See, instead he worked hard and he was content, and God blessed him,
And so he learned that
hard work.
Then the next thing he learned was the pain of being cheated, because all the while Laban was cheating him. So the deceitful man was being deceived by one who was his match, and in fact perhaps even worse than him, more crooked than him, who had no pangs of conscience, and he just cheated his nephew so many times. And Jacob, through all this while being cheated by the uncle, became sensitive to how he had caused pain to other people. God must have spoken to him all these years. You see, the pain you caused to your brother Esau in cheating him of his birthright and in cheating him of the covenant blessing from your father. I remember the days when you pretended to be Esau, dressed in his clothes and putting goat skin all around you and pretending to be your elder brother, and how your father asked, "Who are you?" You said that you were Esau, the elder son. See? Now all this must have pricked the conscience of this man, Jacob, as he came to realize how painful it was to be the victim instead of being the culprit. In the past he was the culprit, he cheated other people, but he never thought of the pain caused to those who were cheated. Now he was being cheated, he was the victim, he knew how painful it was. See? Then of course all these years he learned to use his mind honestly in the right way to gain for himself property. So he grew rich not by stealing, but by honest hard work and applying his mind in the right direction. It is right and good for Christians to use your mind to earn honest hard money. Earn money well, honestly. Because we need money, and we need it to serve the Lord. As long as your heart is not drawn away by money, it is right for you to earn money, okay? Because we need money. But the problem is always that people's heart get drawn away by money, and they worry over money, and they complain about not having money, they complain of their need of money, and it shows that they are already ensnared by money. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and it doesn't need a man to be rich before he falls into this snare. Even people who are poor but who are always thinking of having more money, and complaining all the time about money, they are the ones who have fallen into this error, this snare. Okay? Now, you just be careful about that. Otherwise, we use money just as we use any other things in life, well, to God's glory. So Jacob learned that. But more importantly, through all these years of struggling, working for Laban, he came to learn to trust in God. He knew that all his cleverness and all his hard work would not bring him wealth, would not bring him blessing. So unless God builds up his house, those who labor will labor in vain. And so also, all Jacob's hard work will come to nothing unless God blessed. So that was what he learned. So you can imagine that all those 20 long years working so hard with Laban had not been wasted. God had used that occasion to squeeze out all the deceit from this man, so that from now on he would not simply deceive anyone. But you note that God has not smashed him such that he breaks totally. God has not sort of changed him such that he became useless and he couldn't think anymore. No, God only transformed his nature such that he was still who he was, but nevertheless, he was now being sanctified. All his gifts, all his talents which God has given him would be channeled to holy use. See, and that is what we find in Jacob. So he decided, I have been in the wrong. I should be the one who take the initiative to make peace with my brother Esau. And you must note that it was he who took the initiative. God took the initiative to come and comfort him and reassure him, and now Jacob took the initiative to make peace with his brother Esau. So he sent the message of peace, and he taught his servant to say things properly. Say to my brother, see, your servant Jacob. And he referred to Esau as my lord. You see, so refer to Esau as my lord, and refer to me as your servant. Okay, and
tell him that I have many animals. In other words, I come, you know, with many animals as presents for you. And I'm seeking your favor. So you see there the words are very clear. Verse 4, speak thus to my Lord Esau. Thus your servant Jacob says, I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, and male and female servants, and have sent to tell my Lord, referring to Esau, my Lord, that I may find favor in your sight. See? So Jacob humbled himself and sought peace with Esau. And Esau did not convey his response by words. Instead he said, perhaps, you know, where is he? Yeah. So he got all his men together. How many men? 400 men. And he started riding his horse towards that direction. See? His servants quickly came back to Jacob and said, we have conveyed your message to your brother Esau. What did he say? He didn't say anything. He just came with his 400 men. And you can imagine the heart of Jacob sank, you know. And he began to tremble within himself. What is Jacob going to do to me now? You see, for Esau not to say anything, not to respond to the words conveyed by Jacob through his servants, it was so threatening. He just came with his 400 men, you see. And certainly you have to understand that Jacob was truly shaken by this. But we saw Jacob's plan. Now we see Jacob's prayer. In his desperation, he turned to God in prayer. And note that this is the first recorded prayer of Jacob. Before this, we saw how God interacted with him. But there was no direct prayer from the mouth of Jacob. No doubt along the way, he would have prayed to God, but it's not recorded for us. And no doubt along the way he was learning of this living relationship with his God. Remember that throughout he was not yet a converted man, okay? But he was being acted upon graciously. Now first look at his prayer. It is a lesson to us as to how we should pray. It is a sort of a pattern prayer, as it were. Firstly, there is reverence in his approach to God. Look at verse 9. Jacob says, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family and I will deal well with you. Now, you don't rush in to speak to the king. And you don't straight away say to the king, this is my problem, can you do something for me? No, no, that is not the right approach to someone who is your superior. See, you don't approach your king like that. Okay? And similarly, we don't approach our God like that. Under normal circumstances, we should approach him with reverence and not butch into him and rush into his presence, but approach him with reverence. Then the humility in spirit of this man is to be noted. In verse 10, he says, I'm not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth. Remember his mercies, the goodness of God shown to him, and the truth that God was revealing to him all these years. And don't you miss that. Okay? It's not just what God has done for him, but what God was teaching him. The word of God, the truth of God was coming to him all these years. All those things have not been lost upon Jacob. He was thankful to God for the way God was blessing him beyond his expectation, beyond his asking for them. He did not dare to ask, but God gave to him. He was thankful. But this was not a senseless man who just accepted good things from God, but failed to see what God was saying to him. He had learned what God was trying to say to him. Okay? You have shown to your servant, for I cross over this Jordan with my staff, and now I come with two companies. The humility in spirit of this man, coupled with reverence in approach, is next shown by the earnestness in the petition. So the prayer was reverential in approach with a humble spirit, and now earnestness in seeking
help from God. Verse 11, deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. Okay. And fourthly, there was trust in God's faithfulness. All these years, God had proved himself faithful. God is not like man. When God promises to bless his people, he will carry out his promise. If God promises to judge those who go against him, he will judge those who go against him. God is not like man. He will keep his word. He is a faithful God. So Jacob now trusted in God, who is faithful, who has promised to be with him. Verse 12, for you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So what are the four characteristics of the prayer here? There is reverence in the approach, there is humility in spirit, there is earnestness in the petition, and there is trust in God's faithfulness. How good it would be if we learned to pray like this concerning our normal prayer. There are times when we have in an emergency, like Nehemiah, we have to come to God straight away. God, help me in this matter. But at other times, we come to God in a worshipful spirit. We approach him with reverence, with humility in our heart. We ask earnestly and we trust in his faithfulness. Okay? Now, back to what we were saying earlier about this man who was gradually being awakened spiritually. Note his spiritual journey and see his progress. In the early days, he grew up in a believing family. His father, Isaac, was a true believer. His father, Isaac, followed his father, Abraham. Abraham did not follow his father, Terah, who was only a believer in name. Abraham did not follow his brother, Nahor, who was only a believer in name. Nahor was followed by his son, Laban, who became syncretistic, mixing the worship of Jehovah with having household idols. Abraham made a break from his family tradition. He wanted to be separated unto God. Isaac followed suit, and Jacob grew up in a believing family like that. And we have known that the father prayed for him and the father taught him the truth of God. You turn briefly to chapter 28 of Genesis. You see in verse 1, then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. So you see here, Isaac, the father, blessing him, praying for him, and teaching him spiritual things, spiritual values. See, look at verse 3, how he say, may God Almighty bless you, make you fruitful and multiply you. How the father prayed for God's blessing upon his son. This son, Jacob, had received instruction and prayer from his parents. Then secondly, you note how God met with Jacob in a gracious way. In chapter 28, verse 13, as he ran away from his brother, God met Jacob. Behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your descendants. Verse 15, behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. With God revealing himself personally to Jacob, what should have been Jacob's response? There was no response to God. And all he did was, in verse 16, he awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid. He said, how awesome this place is. This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. This was a new experience to this man. He was being confronted with spiritual reality. We thought all this while he was a believer, just like many of the people here. I wouldn't be surprised. You were brought up in a Christian home, or you were brought up in a church. You had Christian upbringing, but you never had a personal experience of spiritual things. When people pray, you thought it is just an action, so you imitate them, you learn to pray. But you are only uttering a prayer. You're not actually praying from your heart. See? But when God begins to confront you in a personal way, you come to awaken to realize, hey, this is a new experience. This is new to me. I don't know what this is. You see? And here was Jacob being awakened to spiritual things. And then we come to see how he began to respond to God in later years. Look at chapter 31. Now look at verse 3 of chapter 31. We are told that the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and your family, and I will be with you." And later, when he related this incident to his wives, he says in verse 11 of the same chapter, "Then the angel of the Lord spoke to me in a dream, saying, 'Jacob,' and I said, 'Here I am.'" You see here now Jacob responding to God. And finally, we come to see how he responded to God in prayer, the earnest prayer. God had come and sent his angels to comfort him. And now, in his fear of Esau coming with his 400 men, he turned to God with this earnest prayer. So can you not see there, trace before us the gradual development in the spiritual awareness of this man? In name he was a believer. Then he began to come to realize that spiritual things are real. Then finally he began to, in his own fumbling way, respond to God. When God spoke to him, he says, "Here I am." And finally we come to see him praying earnestly to God for help. Okay? Now we are going to see how this man was converted in a moment, in his confrontation with the Lord. But let us move on under this section. We are under the first section considering how he prepared to face his problem with man. So how did he prepare? He made plans. He made a plan to take the initiative to make peace with Esau. But even before he made his plan, God already came to him to comfort him. Then Jacob's prayer to God, and finally his present to Esau. So what he did was that he chose 550 of his best animals of various kinds. If you look at verse 13 and work out the number of animals there, starting from verse 14, 200 female goats and 20 male goats and 200 ewes and 20 rams and 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, 10 foals, add them together. You find that he had 550 animals sent to Esau as a present. But he's not going to send to them in one big group. No. His clever mind began to work. And here you note that this man was clever all this while, but he had channeled his cleverness in a crooked way to gain from others, causing pain to others. See, without any thought of that. But now he was a changed man. But just because he was a changed man doesn't mean his personality has been suppressed. No. He was still there, but all his gifts was now being sanctified, being transformed, and now it is going to be used to God's glory. He has learned honest hard work. He has used his mind to gain money, but he was not sold to money. His heart began to submit himself to God. And now he submitted his mind also to God. So now how is he going to use his mind? For self-preservation. In the past it was for self-gain, but now it's for self-preservation. Here I am in danger. Here are my family members in danger. I'm not going to allow this to happen, so what should I do? Esau is coming with his 400 men. I must quickly appease him. That was his aim, to appease Esau. He knew he had done wrong to Esau. Serious wrong. Stealing his birthright, stealing the covenant blessing. Esau had been so angry to the extent of wanting to kill him. That was no joke. This is no joking matter. So Jacob knew that it was right for Esau to be angry, and he's hoping that he would cool down. He would make up the best he could. So he sent these 550 animals ahead, and now his clever mind began to work. For a person full of fury, full of anger, it takes time for the anger to go away. It's easy to build up, and when it explodes, it is just one big bang. So you can't just come and cut that volcano that is going to escape, to explode. Okay? So you slowly drain away the heat of the volcano. That's how he's going to do it. So he divided the animals into various droves, and at least three are mentioned. We know that there are more than three, and probably five, probably six, you see. So he told the servant in the first drove of animals, if you meet my brother Esau, tell him that this belonged to your brother Jacob and is meant for you as a present, and Jacob is just behind. See? Then the next servant was told the same thing. The third servant was told the same thing, and he told all the servants that. So how many droves were there? Probably five, probably six. But these 550 animals were being sent batch by batch, and along the way, as Jacob met each batch and heard the same thing, that these things belong to Jacob, they are being given to you as a present, and Jacob is just behind. And in this way, Jacob, in his clever mind, but applied now to self-preservation, he was intending to defuse the fury that he knew was in his brother Esau. Okay? Now, Jacob is turning to be a man who is no more selfish, but who was sensitive to the needs of others. He was no more thinking of himself, but he's thinking of his family's safety. He's thinking also of how he should make up to those whom he has wronged. He was thinking of the pain that he had caused his brother Esau and how he should make up with him. You can't help pitying this man. You can't help feeling empathy with this man, this poor man. Hey, this poor man. Let's hope that he succeeds. But before he even confronts with Esau, we see God confronting him. So we come to this second section, how he prevailed in his problem with God. All this while he has a more serious problem. His relationship with God has not been right, despite the fact that God has blessed him, despite the fact that God has revealed his truth to him, but he has not actually committed himself to God. In his need, he turned to God. But has he actually submitted his life to God? See? And that may be the crucial part of the message to many of us present here. You haven't actually committed your life to the Lord. You have experienced so many of his blessings. You have called out to him when you are in need. But you are actually not submitted to him yet. And this is how Jacob came to submit himself to the Lord. First, we consider how he struggled with God, verse 22 to verse 25. Throughout that night, Jacob obviously did not have peace. He couldn't sleep well. We read in verse 21, so the present went on over before him, but he himself lodged that night in the camp. Yeah? Then verse 22, and he arose that night and took his two wives and his two female servants and his 11 sons and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over to the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob came back to be alone. So that night he couldn't sleep. After sending all the presents to meet with Esau, he couldn't sleep. He was still worried. And therefore he decided to wake up, wake all his wives and children, and he himself personally sent them across the brook. Now there's a river that flowed very fast. The Jabbok River flowed very fast and plunged into the Jordan River. So he brought them across and put them safely that side, and he came back to be alone. Why to be alone? Why? There is an element of mystery involved here. But certainly, as we peer closely, there are more things that we can see and learn than is commonly thought. We thought, oh, it's misty there's nothing to see. You turn away. But wait a moment, walk further into the mist, and see, stare deep into the mist, and you discover that there are many things to see, many things to learn. And this is what we find, that Jacob went there, and he saw this man waiting for him. So Jacob seems to know who he was going to meet. He came to be alone. And he was ready, this Jacob. There was still very much of this self-confidence in him, this self-sufficiency in him. Although God has weaned a lot of his selfishness and his deceit in him, but this man, remember, his personality, his character has not been suppressed. It's only going to be transformed and sanctified. It is going to be used to God's glory. So this man was still a fighter. He was ready to confront this man and fight to the death. Okay. And he hadn't told his wives. He hadn't told his family members. He knew that he had to confront this man alone. And salvation is like that. You must come to wrestle with God yourself. You must prevail in that wrestling with the Lord. And Jacob came with the desire, with the aim, with the resolve to prevail. He wrestled with that man. That man was going to destroy him, but he wrestled with that man. He wrestled. He thought, you know, who is this man? He's so mysterious. And from the way he wrestled, it seems that he is very powerful. Is Jacob going to prevail? But our heart is with our hero, Jacob, isn't it? We pitied that man. We saw the man progressing in his spiritual understanding. Let us hope now that he prevail. Will he prevail? And as he wrestled and wrestled, the sun was beginning to rise. The day was beginning to break. You see? So some streaks. The sun was not seen yet, but the light was coming. See? And so as he speaks, as he wrestled, he began to realize this man, there's something unusual about him. Now when you meet with God, the true God, you can't mistake him with the devil. Because God is light, God is love, God is truth. Whereas the devil is darkness. You fear the devil. You confront with the Bible, but the devil, you fear him. But not with God, you see. So Jacob already sensed that this person is different and unusual. So he's wrestling with the Lord, you see, was what he was ready to do. Because he had wrestled all these years and prevailed. Remember how he wrestled with Esau over the family rights and the covenant blessing, and he had prevailed, although in a deceitful way. Remember how he wrestled with Laban, and although cheated so many times and pained so many times, but with God's blessing he prevailed. He was now a rich man. Remember his two wives? The two wives were a big problem, how they competed with one another to give birth to sons and competed to have him sleep with them, you know. He faced with this problem, but he prevailed. He did not give up. Many men will say, I can't do anything anymore, I give up. But not Jacob. He has prevailed. Okay? And when Laban confronted him, he prevailed. See? Now with this man, he's not about to give up yet. He wrestled and he wrestled and he wrestled and he's not going to give up until day was breaking. Okay? Then Jacob pleaded with the Lord. Look at verse 26. The man said, let me go, for the day breaks. And he said, I will not let you go until you bless me. This was Jacob's intent. I've lived all these years, I've struggled all these years, I've come up to this point in my life. See, if you don't bless me, if you don't give this ultimate blessing, you see, then what is the point? You see, what is the point? You know, you must bless me for me to live on meaningfully. See, otherwise, what is there? Now, what more can I get? Get more property, grow richer. What else is there? Say, bless me. You must bless me. Okay. So the man wanted to bless him, but see how he blessed Jacob. He asked him, "What is your name?" He said, "Jacob." See, the moment he uttered the name Jacob, it must have pierced him. Jacob the deceiver. Because Jacob means that. Deceiver. You know. And then the Lord said to him, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. Israel, in the margin, it says prince with God. Not prince of God. It's prince with God. That means God looked upon him like a prince. He acted well as a prince. But a better translation is fighter for God. So God is going to use him as his prince, as his fighter, as his champion. Okay? So he has struggled all these years, but in a deceitful way. So your name just suited your old character. Deceitful. Adway. See? It must have pained Jacob as he uttered his name. Jacob. See? It's like the, your name is fool. You see? Bodo. You see? People ask, what is your name? Bodo. See? Can you imagine uttering your own name, Bodo? Can you utter it with pride? It must have pained you and say, why did my mother, my father give me such a name, Bodo? You see? And for Jacob, as he uttered, Jacob, you know? It must have pierced him. It must have felt so painful. And that man was actually the Lord, the angel of the Lord, the second person of the Holy Trinity, before the Son of God came to permanently take on perfect human nature. He had appeared many times in the form of man. The angel of the Lord who met with Joshua, the angel of the Lord who met with Manoah in the book of Judges, all these were the manifestation of the Son of God in the form of man. Okay. So this man, the Son of God, actually said to him, from now on, you will no longer be called Jacob, but you will be called Israel. That means a fighter for God. And the reason is because all this while you have fought and you have prevailed, you have won. You have fought with God and with man and you have prevailed, you have won. Won in what way? Prevail in what way? Prevail doesn't mean that he has conquered God. But he has gained what he wanted from God. He wanted God's blessing. He has not been able to overcome God. He has only succeeded in getting what he wanted from God by saying, please, bless me. And God was now blessing him. So Jacob, sensing who this man was, now became clearer because he said, you have struggled with God and with man. That is the first indication that this man whom he was struggling with was somehow connected with God. So he asked in a very reverential way, verse 29, tell me your name, I pray. Okay? He dare not be arrogant. He was so humble before this man. Tell me your name, I pray. And that man answered, why is it that you ask my name? And he blessed him there. The name of God is holy. You can't even utter his name. The Jews wouldn't utter God's name. I remember when the angel of the Lord met with Manoah in the book of Judges, promising them a son, Samson, how he went up in the flame. Before he went up, Manoah asked for his name. Then the angel of the Lord said, why should you ask for my name, seeing that it is wonderful? Okay. And so here, why ask my name? You already know who I am. So he blessed him, and when he blessed him, he was convinced, Jacob was convinced, this is God. See, otherwise how would he be blessing him? Okay? And then it dawned upon him, hey, I've met with God face to face, and I'm still alive. Normally, a sinful man meeting with God directly like that would mean that he would be struck dead by the glory of God. In this case, God has been merciful to me. He has not struck me dead. And so, you see now, the next thing is that he called the name of the place Peniel, meaning the face of God. This is where I was face to face with God. And he can be called by a slightly alternative name, Peniel as well, which is the same as Peniel, as you can see in the next verse. Okay? At the face of God. Right? And the next thing we see is that Jacob was touched along the way, back to the struggling time. He thought he was prevailing, okay? But that man, in verse 25, touched him in his socket, in the hip, and he got dislocated. It was painful. There was something that happened to him. Pop, you see? And Jacob knew that he couldn't win over this man. See? That was when he clung on. And as he clung on, you can imagine him beginning to feel desperate, feeling lonely, feeling, what is the point? God, you know, now I'm going to cling on. Please, please bless me. Please bless me. He began to cry, saying, this Pastor Paul is reading too much into the passage. But no, the scripture actually says that. If you turn with me briefly to the book of Hosea, the book of Hosea, after the book of Daniel, you can find the book of Daniel. After the book of Daniel is the book of Hosea. And you see there in Hosea chapter 12, Hosea chapter 12. And we begin reading from verse 3, reading from verse 2. The Lord also brings the charge against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways, according to his deeds he will recompense him. This is talking about the descendants of Judah and Jacob in later years. But using the name of their ancestor Judah and Jacob, name verse 3, he took his brother by the heel in the womb, and in his strength he struggled with God. Yes, he struggled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought favor from him. See there? This Jacob, when he wrestled with the Lord, at first he used his own strength. He thought he was winning. But the angel just showed him, you are no match for me. So just touch him in the hip, and he was dislocated and the muscle that shrank. And it was a permanent injury inflicted upon Jacob. And Jacob, in his pain, and knew that he has lost, but he clung on. Now he is pleading. He's now no more thinking of overcoming the man, but pleading with the man, please bless me. I'm not going to let go until you bless me. I see no reason to live on until you bless me. And he was crying. Okay. And the Lord chose to bless him. See, he got through that period. He has won, not by overcoming God, but by prevailing in getting what he wanted from God. He pleaded with God humbly as a supplicant, no more as a man who thinks that by his own strength he can get everything done. But now he pleaded with God as a supplicant, a person who comes to ask for mercy. Please, God, bless me. God bless him. Then you see, as Jacob, the man disappeared, then Jacob, verse 31, just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him and he limped on his hip. These two facts must be noted. Okay. As he crossed over to go and fetch his wife back, dawn was breaking. The first light of the morning was shining. That's why the man said, let go of me, I have to go. But Jacob said, no, you bless me, otherwise I'm not going to let you go. So the Lord blessed him. The Lord disappeared. Okay. Jacob now was alone. He walked over, crossed over. And usually in a film show, we have a happy ending. But the happy ending ends with the man, the hero, walking into the setting sun. But in this case, Jacob walks into the rising sun to show to us a new day has begun for Jacob. From now on, he's a different man. From now on, he does not live in his own strength. From now on, his life is fully submitted to God. That is what he's declaring to us. That is the first point to note. Then the second point to note is that he has a limp in his hip. From now on, he walks with a limp. You say, what sort of hero is that walking with a limp? Who wants to have a limp all his life? We make up, we are not satisfied with the beauty God already has for us, and then we want to beautify ourselves, double eyelid la, pull in the cheek la, and this and that, remove the wrinkles and so on. Okay? But here was a man who was maimed from then on. Okay? But it has done good for Jacob. It is going to be a constant reminder to him that he was once a self-confident and self-sufficient man who did not need God. But now his life is fully submitted to God. And remember another man who was quite like Jacob, he was Saul. And when he was converted, he was given a thorn in the flesh.
And 3 times he pleaded with the Lord to remove the thorn in the flesh from him. But the Lord says, my grace is sufficient for you. And that is what Jacob has to learn. From now on he walks with a limp, but he has inner spiritual strength. God was going to use him as his fighter. From now on he's going to fight a spiritual battle. God is going to use him to his glory in his work. And that is far better than winning the next election. That is far better than being the prime minister of the country. That's far better than winning to create a utopia in Malaysia. You think you ever will arrive at utopia in Malaysia? Let us get things right. While we have social responsibilities, while we carry out our social responsibilities as faithfully as possible. But for a child of God, he lives for the kingdom of God. He's not going to be sidetracked to all these temporal things that will pass away. We must live for our God. Far more important than struggling with man, we must struggle with God first and prevail. Have you struggled with the Lord? Have you had that personal experience of submission to him? Are you walking into the sun to a new day of serving the Lord? And that is the challenge of this passage to us today. So let us recap, summarize. In the first section, we have seen how he prepared to face man. In the second section, we see how God faced him. And he had to struggle with God, dealing with his problems with God first. And he prevailed. And together, these two sections show to us that our enmity with God is a far greater problem than our problems with man. So let us seek to be reconciled with our God first before we think of all the problems that we are facing on this earth. So as we close, let me ask you 3 questions. First question, do you see that your enmity with God is more serious than all other problems in this life? In fact, it is because your relationship with God is not right that is the root of all these other problems. Until your problem with God is set right, you are not going to succeed in solving the world's problems. Then second question related to that is, do you see your need to struggle with God for his blessing? Instead of struggling so much in this world, what have you struggled for in this world? To do well in your studies, to get into a good university, to get a good job, to get married, to set up family, to earn more money, to establish yourself in your career. How many things you have struggled for. But have you actually considered your personal problem with God, that you need to come and plead with God and wrestle with God until he gives you the blessing that you need? Until that is done, you can gain the whole world. But what does it profit a man to gain the whole world but to lose his soul? You have heard that many times. You know that this is a passing world. This is a temporary world. You can't bring all these things with you. You know the story of the man who asked for his coffin to have 2 holes drilled, and he put up his hands out there. He told his, instructed his people, to, when you lay me in the coffin, put my hands out. I want to show everyone that I came into the world with nothing. I carry with me nothing. You have heard all this so many times and you can agree with that, but you agree only for the moment. Your life has never been transformed. You have never actually given yourself over to the Lord. You have not trusted the Lord and the Lord alone. You have not served God and God alone. And until this is done, until you come and wrestle with God and prevail with him, you are going to find that the things of this world are vain. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Okay? Then the third question I want to ask you is, do you see that the thorns of flesh or the limbs that you have in life are actually tokens of God's grace for which we need to be thankful? Have you ever complained that perhaps you are not as beautiful or as handsome as other people? Have you ever complained that perhaps you are not as tall as you want to be?
You always feel small. You always feel inadequate. Have you ever felt that, you know, I wish I had studied better. I have a degree. I have a higher degree. I have this and that. Don't, friends. Do what you can to better yourself. But if you have done what you are able, and that is it, accept God's will for you. Commit your life to God. He has given you gifts. Every one of us have been given gifts and talents. And if there is any area of our life that makes us humble, it is for our good. If God has dealt a blow with you, disappointments have come into your life. See, you couldn't understand it. You couldn't accept it at that time. But learn to look back and realize that God was dealing mercifully with you. What if some serious things have happened in later days? Now God was sparing you from these greater problems by giving you that problem at that time. But it's painful, you say. It leaves a scar in my life, you say. But understand this. Just as Jacob walked with a limp and it was good for his soul. Just as Saul carried with him the thorn in his flesh and it was good for his soul. Let us see that all these limbs and all these thorns in our flesh, they are good for our souls. What is needed is we commit our lives to Him. We rest in Him. We go forward into the rising sun in His strength. And we know that with the feeling of God's Spirit, we will be able to accomplish all that the Lord wants us to do for Him. And that is all that matters in the end. How comforting it is for believers to know that the Lord has promised that He will never leave us nor forsake us. And as with Jacob, we can cling on to His promise. And we will not let go of the Lord until the last breath on this earth. A last word to those who are so near. You are so near to the kingdom of God. You are actually at the gate of the kingdom. But you have not actually stepped in. Come now. Come to the Lord. Plead with Him to bless you. Plead with Him. Do not let go of Him. Plead with Him to bless you. Don't let go. Plead with Him until you come through this experience victorious. Let us close.